Welcome to another message from Columbus First Assembly. Thanks for listening as we strive to learn and live the Word and ways of God. Our hope is that you're encouraged by today's message.
The things which shatter us often come out of nowhere and unexpectedly. Have you ever thought or said to yourself in a moment of pain or discouragement or fear, "There's nothing I can do. There's nothing I can do." It usually doesn't happen right away. Usually a day passes or 2 days pass. You're just thinking what you can do until you finally come to that point where you say, "There's nothing I can do." That's what Evelyn thought the day that her husband came home and said, "Hey, we need to talk." And he said, "I don't love you anymore." Now, Evelyn understood some of the ups and downs of marriage and of love and said back to her husband, Scott, that, "You know, we can work on this." See, they've been married for quite a while. Evelyn and Scott were at a church. He was the youth pastor. She was his wife. She helped support him as he got his education in Bible school. That's where they met. And during his first pastorate at a small church, she worked full-time to supplement the income. They had done very well there, and now he was called to a larger church, and they've been there for 3 years. 3 years at this larger church. When Scott said, "I don't love you anymore," she's thinking, "But we have two children." And she says, "Scott, look, I know love goes up and down. We can work on this. We can work on it. I'll work on it." And that's when Scott dropped the bomb. He said, "You don't understand. I'm filing for divorce. There's this young lady in the church. I've fallen in love with her. We've been having an affair. And it's over between us." And it was at that time as Evelyn felt like she was kicked in her stomach that she realized, "There's nothing I can do." The stories I'm sharing with you today are compilations of stories and lives that I've read about or people that I have actually watched go through these things. Names and some events have been altered just so that people who actually had walked through this, it wouldn't draw attention to them. And I will tell you this, none of the stories are compiled from anyone that I know here in Columbus. Casey, another individual, another family, Casey had grown up in a Christian home. She always went to church or was taken to church. Her parents were leaders in their local church, and high school came and it became hard on this family. Casey began to start rebelling. Now she's 18, almost 19 years of age, and community college isn't going well for Casey. Her part-time job isn't going well. There was stress and there was strain in the family, but her mom and dad, Joyce and William, never expected what they found the day that they returned from an out-of-town trip. They returned, they opened the front doors, they called out to Casey, and she didn't answer, she didn't respond, and seemed a little odd, but they knew sometimes she stayed out late. But then when they got to their dining room table, there was the note, "Mom and Dad." The note basically said, "I'm just tired of all these rules and regulations. I'm tired of all the stuff that you guys make me do. I met a guy, and he's going west, and I'm going with him." They immediately called Casey's cell phone. and they heard it ring. They followed the noise of the ring, and it was in her room, and they had found that not only had she left her cell phone, her computer, her tablet, and most of her belongings, she was gone. Joyce and William immediately got on the phone to anybody that they could think of that would have any information about Casey. Any information. They called all of her friends. And through the conversations, they found out that this was something Casey had been planning for at least a couple of months, maybe even longer. But the friends all said the same thing. Casey wouldn't tell us where she's going because she knew that you would call me. They knew that you would call all of her friends, and she said she doesn't want to be found, so she didn't even tell us where she's going. It took 2 days for William and Joyce to get through all of the various people that they could think of would have a bit of information. They called the authorities, but since Casey was an adult and she hadn't been forced to leave, there was nothing that they could do. After 2 days of trying, and through many tears, William and Joyce found themselves saying out loud, "We don't know what to do." As I prayed and thought about what I should share this Easter morning with you, I felt a gentle prompting of Jesus. And I received two very brief sentences. The first is this: I don't know what to do. I think there might be many of you here who have said something like this to themselves or to God over the past few weeks or the past few months. I don't know what to do. Maybe it involved an illness for you or a family member. Maybe it involved a financial or a relational setback. Maybe it involved the loss of a job or the loss of a relationship. But you have said to yourself, or you've said to God over and over again, as you looked at what happened and what your future might hold, "I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do." And I feel that today there are people listening to me right now, or who will listen through our podcast, that as you look towards your future, many, if not all, of the plans you had made about your future have changed. Maybe you thought you could retire soon, but now it looks as if you will have to work many additional years because of what has taken place in your life. You thought that maybe you'd be able to travel, but now that's impossible because of what has taken place in your life and family. Where you are right now is not what you planned. This was not how it was supposed to be. What that person did, what those people didn't do, what that person took from you, leaves you thinking, "I don't know what to do." Evelyn and her young children didn't know what to do. How would they make it? How could they stay at the church where Scott used to work, where he had an affair, where people seemed to whisper about her and her family when they walked in the door? William and Joyce barely had enough energy to go to work. They had a hard time going to church, let alone leading in some areas of ministry. They resigned most positions. They felt like failures in Christianity. They felt like failures as parents. They have a child that is left and they cannot contact or communicate with this daughter. All they know is she went west. Joyce and Williams waited at home most nights, hoping for a text, a phone call, or an email. Daily they checked Casey's Instagram account. But it was as if she had dropped off the face of the earth. They even searched Instagram, because that was where she almost lived her life. They searched Instagram, hoping that maybe she'd opened another account. And they would at least know if she was alive. They searched different spellings of her name, thinking maybe she was using an alias. They searched through any people that seemed to live out west. Maybe they would catch a glimpse, a picture. Nothing. They contacted Social Security to see if Social Security could tell them anything. Was she working? Is she paying into the system? Does she have a job? But of course, they learned nothing. They consulted a lawyer to see what he could discover. And they picked up every call that came to their cell phones just in case. Every telemarketer, every robocall, every unknown number. They were assured that they could lower their student loan debt. They were told that Social Security was going to file a lien. They didn't believe any of that, but there was just a glimmer of hope that if they picked up the phone, maybe it would be Cassie. They didn't know what to do. So at least they could pick up the phone at all hours of the day and night. Weeks turned into months, and then months turned into years. I mentioned that there were two statements which I felt Jesus drop into my heart this Easter morning, and the first is this very distressing statement that many of us, I expect, have probably uttered at some time or other in our lives: I don't know what to do. It's that helpless feeling we all experience from time to time. But the second is this, and it's a much more comforting statement. The second statement that I felt Jesus speak into my heart for Easter is this: I'm here for you. I don't know what to do when we utter those statements, when we utter that statement. There's another statement that sometimes, if we listen, maybe we'll hear it with words, maybe we'll hear it in another way. It's as if Jesus is saying, but I'm here for you. Jesus wants you to know this morning, no matter what you're walking through, no matter what circumstances you are in where you think and say, I don't know what to do, he wants to assure you today, I am here for you. Now, that second statement isn't just kind of prophetic, isn't just the still small voice of my heart. It's just not my imagination. It's actually based on some very, very, very strong scripture. Jesus himself said something very, very similar to this. After Jesus rose from the dead, on that Easter, that very first Easter, he appeared to many. But he also told them that they were to go to Galilee and he would meet them there. So a few days, probably a week or two later, this did take place, and Matthew captures it in his gospel in the 28th chapter. When Jesus went and he met his followers there in Galilee, most of the time on this passage of scripture, we concentrate on this thing that has been called the Great Commission. This is where Jesus gave them and us our marching orders for the future, that we're to go into all the world and preach the good news. But there's something else in this passage that I want to focus on this morning. Not so much the Great Commission, but what Jesus said at the close of the Great Commission. Matthew 28, verses 16 through 20, coming up on the screen, this is what Matthew recorded. Then the 11 disciples left for Galilee, going to the mountain where Jesus had told them to go. When they saw him, they worshipped him, but some of them doubted. Jesus came and told his disciples, I have been given all authority in heaven and on earth. Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit. Teach these new disciples to obey all the commands I have given you. And be sure of this: I am with you always, even to the end of the age. That's what I want you to hear. And be sure of this: I am with you always. When life or people deal you a terrible blow, When you say to yourself, I don't know what to do, Jesus said, I am with you always. When life hurts, Jesus says, my child, my follower, my son, my daughter, I am with you always. If he was here this morning, he would say, what you're going through, how your life has changed, I am with you always. The writer of the book that we call Hebrews, it's a letter. In the closing lines of the letter, the writer says this, speaking about God, and it says in Hebrews 13:5, for he himself has said, I will never leave you nor forsake you. I am with you always. I will never leave you nor forsake you. Every person here is walking through or probably will walk through a time when you won't know what to do. That's what Craig and Heidi said when their daughter was killed by a drunk driver. They're now raising 3 children, and they're both over 60. They're parenting again. Craig did all of the numbers. He's kind of one of those numbers guy, and he said, you know what? I'll be 75 years old when the last one graduates high school. It was not what they planned. Looking at their finances, they had done some things so that they could move into retirement, but not retirement and raising 3 little ones. Not quite infants, but certainly going to need extra, so their lives changed. We don't know what to do, but we're trusting you, Jesus. That's what kept them going. You said you would always be with us. You would never leave us or forsake us. That's what kept them going. Tom and Joyce, they had moved across the country for a lucrative job. They had prayed. They even felt a sense of peace about the move. They were excited about the move. They were excited when they got there, excited when they moved into their new home. And within 6 months, the company closed. One partner in this small company had stolen the assets, a majority of them. Then he left the country, and the other partner could not keep the company open. And now Tom's out of a job. And the economy had taken a downturn. And it would take Tom over 2 years to find another job. I don't know what to do. But Jesus would say, I'm here for you. Remember Evelyn, that former youth pastor's wife? Evelyn cried out often to God, feeling so betrayed, so rejected, so left alone, raising those kids by herself. Child support did come in most of the time, and that helped, but it's not the same as having your spouse there. There were days she was ready to give up on God, give up on the church, give up on Christianity, but she found herself coming back, crying out to Jesus, and every time she found that he was there for her. He never left her. He never forsook her. And it was hard, but he was there. And that same assurance that Jesus was here for them was what helped William and Joyce through the week after week, month after month of hearing nothing from Cassie. They didn't know what to do, but Jesus was with them. There were weeks when they were saying, God, why did you let this happen? There were weeks when they said, God, what did we do wrong? There were weeks that they yelled at God in their doubt and in their frustration. And through it all, he never left them. And they plugged on. But what about Cassie? What about Scott? Cassie did go west with this man who she hardly knew. And after 9 months, he left her. But Cassie was a stubborn girl. She didn't want to go back to all the rules and regulations, so she determined that she was going to make it on her own. And so out west, she started to make a living. Combination of both legal and illegal ways. Time to time, she sold drugs. Sometimes she sold herself. She worked the late shifts at IHOP and Waffle House. Anything she could do. But after about 3 years, it wore on her. After about 3 years of frustration, 3 years of feeling rejected, Casey found herself saying, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. She was tired of the illegal activities. She felt very lucky that she had not yet been arrested. She started saying, I don't know what to do. And as she did, she started to think again about her upbringing, the story she had heard about Jesus. She was in church all the time, whether she wanted to be or not. She remembered that one story about a son who left home and squandered his life. And she even started to pray, even though she was unsure if God would hear her. Now, she didn't know what to do, but what she found out was Jesus was there for her also. He said, I'm here for you. From time to time, Casey would dial her father's cell phone. But she never hit the send button. She would just put the number in. She had gotten a new burner phone. No one had the number back where it was at home. And she would look at the number on the screen in front of her, and she'd power off and put it back in her purse or pocket. But one day, she dialed that number. She had sent. And she held the phone. It rang 3, 4, 5 times. She thought, oh, he's not going to pick up. But then her dad answered and said hello. And she immediately hung up. Her dad on the other end thought, another telemarketer, another robocall. You know, they don't say anything right away, so you hang up on them. I don't know why. Maybe it was that she heard her dad's voice, but all night long, she wondered, what would he say? It took her another couple of days before she got the courage up. Once again, she dialed that familiar area code and those familiar 7 digits. It sat there on her phone for what seemed like an eternity until she hit send. Once again, it rang several times. And this time, when her dad picked up and said hello, very quietly, she said, Daddy? Remember Scott? Former youth pastor, having an affair with a young woman in a church. Chose her over his wife and kids. Well, he married her. They now have a couple of kids. Scott left the ministry. He left the church. He's no longer following God. But if Scott was ever to begin to look towards God again, to seek Jesus, Scott would find that Jesus would say to him, I'm here for you. I'm here for you. Wouldn't change the circumstances, wouldn't change the consequences of his action. But Jesus does not give up on us, even if we have given up on him. For the one harmed this morning, the one wounded or rejected or abandoned who says, I don't know what to do, Jesus says, I am here for you. For the one who did the harming, the abandoning, the rejecting, and the sinning, Jesus also says, I am here for you. This is the good news of grace. Sherry and I feel blessed at this season in our life, but it always hasn't been this way. I told you that the other stories were compilations. This one's not a compilation. This is us. Early in our marriage, we had our ups and downs. I was in an industry that, and working in places that wasn't very stable, wasn't very secure. I was in the television industry. I was a production manager. I worked behind the scenes, producer, director, camera person. There was a variety of things that I did. Graduated from college and got a really a decent position. Sherry had one too. Economy took a hit. I was let go. But with all the enthusiasm that a young person has, knowing that their skill set is good and their career, I went and networked and everybody that I knew and found another job. I was off work for several weeks. Several weeks when we didn't have savings, several weeks when the credit card balances went up. But I got another position and I moved. Sherry and I didn't have any children yet. Well, actually we had one, we just didn't know yet. We moved out to far western Kansas. Worked at a small television station, a startup, a brand new station, and I just dove in. Sherry found some work probably within a month or two of being there. We found out she was pregnant with our first child. And then we found the wonderful insurance thing. Pre-existing conditions. And so that was a pregnancy we paid for mostly out of pocket, which we didn't have. So we paid off at a period of time. But it was exciting to be in this new position. There for just over a year, when the owners of this little station said they couldn't afford to keep it open anymore, and they turned out the lights and sent us with minimal severance and a good letter of recommendation. Oh God, what are we going to do now? So I did what all young people do, still believing much in ourselves. I networked, contacted, did all of those things. After 8, 10, 12 weeks, found another position, loaded now. My wife and my daughter, in our vehicles and in our U-Haul, drove again and started a new position. That position was going okay. I was hired to do one thing, but was doing something else. Working hard, they were finally going to create a position for me, a director position. I was doing sets and lighting and running camera. But my attitude was getting bad. I was unhappy that things didn't go quite my way. I thought I was doing okay. I was actually doing a good job, but it was the attitude that was getting to me when my boss called me in and said, Rick, it's not working. And I was fired. As Sherry says, it took over a year before I admitted how much of it was my fault. Maybe it was longer than that. Now I'm out of work again. It had only been about 3 years. I had three jobs. Wasn't quite as excited this time, but I networked. And I got another job. We once again loaded up the U-Haul, said goodbye to friends, and drove. Started now the fourth job. I worked hard, it was going well. It was at another TV station, it was an ABC affiliate, owned by a bigger station. We were working hard to make it go. And doing all right. But corporate was in San Francisco. The affiliate that we were connected with was in Wichita, and we were on the far edge of the state. And corporate said we weren't generating enough, and they needed to make some significant cuts. So the general manager, who wasn't actually on site, drove in. Anytime the general manager drives in, it's usually not good, even if he buys you lunch. There was already rumors and suspicions, but one by one, people were called into his office. Several came out in tears. I thought my job was safe. And in one sense, it was. But I was called in also. And he sat down, he said, "We've got to make some cuts. And we need what you do, but we can't afford to pay you what we're paying you. And so here's what you've got. Take a 20% pay cut, or we'll give you X amount of weeks of severance. You do a great job. There was nothing wrong with my job performance. You do a great job. We just can't afford you." I said, "Can I think about it?" I think it surprised him. I think he immediately felt that I would take the 20% pay cut. I remember it was a Monday. I remember it so clearly because on Tuesday morning at our little Assemblies of God church in that community, we had Tuesday morning prayer. We met at 6 o'clock, handful of us. I can basically tell you to the place, take you to the place I was sitting that morning. Much smaller than this sanctuary, take the two center sections. And I walked in, the back door. It was kind of heavy on my heart. I mean, I'm dealing with making this decision. I remember sitting right about here. A couple of other guys were there, one over here, the pastor was up front. And as happens, we had some prayer needs. But he said, do any of you have a need? You know, I wasn't going to raise my hand. I can deal with this. But I did. But what happened, I didn't expect. I said, "I got a decision to make." And then 4+ years of emotion washed over me. And I began to sob. My body began to shake. I was embarrassed. I'm kind of an elder at the church, teaching Sunday school class, helping out wherever. And the room had that real awkwardness to it. Guys don't know what to do when another guy breaks down. And these are farmers, hard workers. But one by one, they came over. They laid hands on me. And I just cried. My story came out. This was another, you know, there was this job loss and that job loss and the firing. And I got to the point, I don't know what to do. Time after time after time, I don't know what to do. prayed, they laid hands. I went home. I don't remember when Sherry and I talked. It might have been that night or it might have been that morning. I don't know. I walked in. General manager was there. I said, listen, I'll take the pay cut, but I just want to stay. How are we going to make it on 20% less money? We now have two children. But we took the pay cut. And you know what? We found that Jesus was here for us. He didn't leave us. He didn't forsake us. He was there for us. Worked hard and God began to bless. And through a long series of circumstances, left TV, felt a call to ministry, and now I stand before you as a personal testimony on this Easter Sunday morning that when you utter the words, I don't know what to do, if you're one of his followers, someplace in the background, he's whispering, I'm here for you. That's the good news of grace. The good news of forgiveness. The good news of the death and resurrection of Jesus. I am here for you. Never will I leave you. Never will I forsake you. Years ago, I ran across a song by a singer named Mandisa. It's been recorded a number of years ago, but it really reflects the theme of God being with us in all circumstances of life. And since this song ministered to me throughout my times of not knowing what to do and God being with us, I wanted to share it with you this Sunday morning. So here's a video of Mandisa's song. He is with you.
Time. kids are grown. When there's too much space and you feel alone, then you're worried if you got it right or wrong.
The good news of grace, the good news of forgiveness, the good news of the death and resurrection of Jesus is I am here with you. Never will I leave you. Never will I forsake you. If you don't know what to do right now in your life, whatever your circumstances are, have you called out to Him? Maybe you have been calling out to Him for months or years. Call out again. Keep calling out. Do you feel like maybe you've gone too far, done too much, do not deserve His love or acceptance? Call out to Him. Because none of us deserve His love. None of us deserve His acceptance. None of us deserve His grace. They are all free gifts made possible out of His love. John 3:16 says, "For God so loved the world," and I want to personalize it this morning for someone or several of you, "For God so loved you that He gave His one and only Son, that whoever believes in Him would not perish but would have everlasting life." And to prove this love, Jesus died on a cross and then came back to life again. His arms are open this morning to the broken and hurting. His arms are open to the sinner, to the rebel, to the self-centered. His arms are open to all today. A song that has become a perennial Easter favorite, maybe not to all people, but certainly to me. But it's really not just a song that speaks about Easter. It's not just a song that speaks about resurrection. It's a song that speaks about Jesus being very present with us. And us being able to face an unknown future. It was written many years ago by Bill and Gloria Gaither. The opening Easter medley by Anthem Light started with the words, "Because He lives, I can face tomorrow. Because He lives, all fear is gone." Are you fearful this morning of your future? I'll tell you what, I was so afraid of our future. That Tuesday when I broke down in College Drive Assembly of God Church in Colby, Kansas, I was so afraid. I didn't want to go around that mountain again. But because He lives, I was able to face tomorrow. Because He lives, all fear was gone. And then I reminded myself, because He lives, I know He holds the future. And these are the words that I want us all to get into our hearts and our spirits, no matter what you're walking through. So the team is going to lead us in singing this great old hymn. Would you stand as we sing, "Because He Lives"?
You've been listening to a message from Columbus First Assembly. We hope that you've been encouraged in your spiritual journey. If you're not part of a local church and would like to attend one of our regular services, our church is located at the corner of 10th and Iowa Street in Columbus, Indiana. Our Sunday morning worship services start at 10 a.m., and our Wednesday evening studies begin at 7 p.m. And while you're online, check out our website at columbusfirstassembly.org for details and information about our church. You will also find other messages and series that you can listen to or download. Thanks for spending some time with us and for taking advantage of this resource from Columbus First Assembly, where we strive to learn and live the Word and ways of God.